Okay. Before we begin, let's take a few moments to put our hands together to worship the Supreme One, the Sublime One, the Sage, the Conqueror of Mara, the winner of defilements, the Tathagata. By chanting the Namaskara all together and with me. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. You know, yesterday. Yesterday is a very important day, isn't it? Yesterday is a very important day, isn't it? No, is it not? If it weren't for yesterday, we won't have today, would we? So yesterday is an important day. Excuse me. What about the day before? Was that not an important day? That also was an important day. If it wasn't for the day before, we wouldn't have yesterday. If we didn't have yesterday, we won't have today. The 1st of October. What do you think about that day? That is an important day. Because if it wasn't for the 1st, we wouldn't have the 2nd or the 3rd. And as well as, you know, October 1st is very important because it's Children's Day, a day dedicated for children, celebrated worldwide. It's really interesting, isn't it? How we separate days and time and, you know, give it importance. I mean, yes, yesterday was very important, but not for the same importance that you may think. Yesterday was important because we had past couple, say, thousands of millions of minds. And that thousands of millions of minds, you had thought, said, or done something that gave you, you know, for every action, there's a reaction, which we call karma vipaka. For every action, we have, you know, our consequences. And therefore, we have more consequences for a future, you know, for a future mind. That's why yesterday was important. But also, we have to think about yesterday. How much of yesterday did I use wisely? How much of yesterday did I use wisely? Because there's something, you know, if I give you money, if I lend you money, you can give money back. You know, I can give you, you know, if you come to the monastery, you know, we can give you a place to stay. And when you leave, you can give that, you know, place back. You know, where it's very easy to trade things. But one thing you cannot trade is what? Time. Time you cannot trade. Why? You can never get it back. I can trade time with you, can't I? I can say, okay, you know, I'll give you a day. Right? Spare, you know, I'll give you my entire day. Now, can I get that entire day back? Can I trade my time? No, because when time is gone, it's gone. When time is gone, it's gone. No matter what we do, no matter what we try to do, we can't get time back. So, you know, yesterday was a very important day because that's a time that we can never get back. So we have to think about it. How much of yesterday did I use wisely? How much of yesterday did I use to help another person? How much of yesterday did I use to, you know, contemplate about the truth of the world? To practice the Dhamma? How much of yesterday did I use? If you can say yesterday I used it wisely, then hats off to you. If you say yesterday, you know, I wasted a lot of time doing X, you know, I had to do Y and Z, and, you know, it took too much time, I wasn't able to contemplate as much, I wasn't able to do as much, then, you know, you can't get that time back. So what should you think? Today, I won't fall to the same traps that I fell into yesterday, that I fell into yesterday. Instead, today, I'm going to use my time wisely. So if I asked you, what is the most important time? What is the most important time? Your birthday, isn't it? Because without your birthday is very important. You know, we have it once a year. We celebrate it to the maximum we possibly can. Or we don't celebrate it at all, because your birth is important. That's the most important, you know, time of your life. Is it? No, the most important time is what time? This very moment. Now. That's the most important time. Why? Why is that the most important time? Because that's the time that we actually have. Because you can't go back in time and change the past. And you can't go forward in time and change the future. So the most important time we have is now, because only now can we do something. I mean, you know, we take time to plan what we're going to do tomorrow. I mean, that's something that we always do. You know, tomorrow I have to wake up and let's say, you know, if it's a Monday, I have to go to work, go to school. And you plan your day. But you can only plan the day when? Now. You know how sometimes you do something, you feel guilty? You feel guilty about not what happened in the past. You feel guilty about what happened in the past now. Because you only have this moment. You can only have this moment. So, you know, when you relive your past, you know, say, for example, if I say, you know, remember the last time you know, the happiest time you've had, the happiest moment in your life. You can only experience that happiest moment when? Now. You are drawing your memory to this moment and enjoying that moment. You're not enjoying the moment of the past. Instead, you're enjoying this moment. So this is why this moment is one of the most important, if not one of the, it is the most important time we have. So we should be asking ourselves, am I using this moment as wisely as I can? Now, something that on Thursday, Guru Sarnan said, In his sermon, he does to our monks, Sanakariks, Sanakarikas. Something that he explained. And I think it's very important, because I want to touch upon it, and then we'll move on to something completely different. Is, you know, when we talk about this moment, we always have this feeling that there's always going to be a next moment. Living in this moment, we always have a feeling that there's a next moment. That's why, you know, we do things, you know, with a half heart. Because we always think that, you know, I can do the same thing tomorrow. You know, I have it tomorrow, therefore I'm going to do the same thing tomorrow. So, you know, maybe I don't need to do this, you know, as the best as I possibly can. Because I have a tomorrow. Think about this. if this was your last, say, because we can't really comprehend moments. But if I was to say, you know, this is your last 24 hours on earth, how would you spend it? How would you spend it? What would your morning be like if it's your last 24 hours? You know, this is my last 24 hours on earth, I'm going to spend another 5 hours sleeping. The alarm goes off, snooze. Amma, another 5 more minutes, please. Give me 5 more minutes. How would you spend the last 24 hours? Let's say it's your last 24 hours, you know, and let's say, you know, you get the opportunity to, say, offer alms to the Mahasangha. How would you do it? You have an opportunity to help a person. Someone has fallen down. It's your last 24 hours. How would you help them? If we give it, you know, only 50% of our effort, that's because we believe, you know, there'll be another time, another moment, you know, there'll be some more time in the future. Therefore, do I need to give it my 100%? Someone's fallen down. You know, if it was your last 24 hours, you'd help them, you know, brush off the dust, you know, ask if they're okay. If they need a glass of water, you'll bring a glass of water. Doesn't matter if the glass of water is, you know, 10 meters away. You would go the 10 meters and give them the glass of water because, you know, this is your last time you'll help a person. This is your last ever time you'll have your help person. So you'll give that person your 100% attention. See, if it's your last 24 hours, would you ever doom scroll? You know, the thing that you know lots of people nowadays do before they go to sleep is turn on their phone, go on social media and just scroll. Waste 2, 3, 4 hours of their time. Yesterday, I was able to go to an international school and talk to some children there. And, you know, I asked them, you know, how many of you spend, you know, because we're in the 21st century, you know, surrounded by technology. I asked them, you know, put your hand up if you spend more than 2 hours on your phone doing absolutely nothing. Nothing meaning nothing useful. And if I remember, more than 75% of the entire hall put their hand up. Now, if this was your last 24 hours, would you? No, because we think, you know, I have another day tomorrow. Another whole day tomorrow where I can do what I want to do tomorrow. Now, this doesn't mean that once you think about like this, you know, you go tell everyone, you know, today's my last day on earth. I don't mean you have to go tell everyone that today is my last day. It's my last day meeting you. Can I please talk to you? No, I don't mean you have to tell people, but you know, the feeling that you have. Because if you start thinking like this, you can slowly bring that last 24 hours to last 12 hours. Because if it's your last 24 hours on earth, I mean, if it's your absolute last 24 hours on earth, how many hours would you spend sleeping? The absolute minimum, because why? You have lots of things to do, don't you? You have absolute lots of things to do. Would you spend 12 hours sleeping? Of your, you know, 24 hours left, would you spend 12 hours sleeping? Giving yourself only 12 hours to do whatever you have to do. No, you spend the absolute minimum you need. If you know that, you know, I'm okay with 7 hours of sleep, you take 7 hours. If you know that, you know, minimum, you know, they say 6 hours is enough, then take 6 hours and, you know, spend the rest of the time doing something else. But if you start seeing, you know, if you start trying to see this as, you know, my last 24 hours, slowly you can change it to what? Last 12 hours, last 6 hours, last 3 hours, last 2 hours, last hour, last half an hour, last minute, last second. That means this second that goes by, you're using it to the maximum you possibly can. You're giving your 100% in that second. What about next second? You're still alive, so what do? You give that second also your 100%. Because your time is precious. And your time is limited. So why give your time the value it deserves? It's priceless. So why not give it the value it deserves? Do everything to the maximum you possibly can. Because once you start doing that, now you're able to live in this moment. Now you're able to live in this very moment because you realize that only thing I have is this moment. I am planning my future in this moment. So let me do it to the maximum. I'm planning, I'm thinking about, what I want to do in this moment. Let me do it to the maximum. I'm talking to someone in this moment. Let me give that person my maximum. When you talk with people, you talk with a friend and whatnot, the worst thing to do is to have something that will distract you nearby. Because now you can't give them your 100% attention. Now, what's the one thing that distracts humans the most? That rectangular thing in your pockets? In some of your pockets? When you're talking with another person, don't have that out. Because why? Now you can't give them your 100% focus. Because what is a phone? A phone is something that keeps you alive in the future. A phone is something that keeps you alive in the future. How? Why do we keep a phone with us? If you ask yourself, what is the basic requirement of a phone? For calls and messages. Basic. If you took button phones, brick phones, the minimum it can do is call and text. So if we have a phone out and ready, what does that mean? We are waiting for what? We're waiting for what? A call or a text? We're waiting to be distracted. So if you have a phone out or have some sort of distraction out, how can you give your 100% focus on the person in front of you? If you have a phone in your pocket and you know it's there, how can you give your 100% focus on the thing in front of you? Because you know it's out here because it's going to have a call, it's going to have a text, and when it calls, what are you going to have to do? At the very least, check who's calling. You don't need to always pick up, but at least check who's calling. Because why? You're living in the what? The phone is something that tries to keep you in the what? Future. Keep you waiting for the future. This is why, if you talk with someone, give that person your 100% attention. If you ever get to, say, do a meritorious activity, this is your last time. If today, was your last day on earth, and, say before you go to sleep, say you worship the Buddha, how would you worship the Buddha if you know this is your last worship? Buddha sadhu, and go to sleep. What would you do? You see, this is something, we have to live in this moment. Because if you feel that, why do I have to do it to the maximum? Before, for example, children, before they go to sleep, as a Sri Lankan custom, they worship their parents. If they feel that, I'm just going to worship them and just go quickly, That means what? They're not living in this moment because they have something. They have, there's something more important in the future. What's that? Sleeping. So I'm going to quickly worship and then go to sleep. Because again, they're not living in this moment. They have something in the future. That's why this is your last minute, last second. This is your last mind. Come to this moment. Live in this moment. This is your last sermon. This is your last time you ever get to hear them. Well, how would you think about it? What would you do? Now, again, this doesn't mean that you have to always think, you know, when you talk to someone, you know, this today is my last day. I'm not going to survive after this. And tomorrow you tell them the same thing. No, this is just a feeling. This is a way to think. Again, this is not for you to be moody and gloomy, thinking, oh, my last 24 hours, I'm not going to survive after this. No, it's not for you to be moody or gloomy. It's for you to just understand that you're spending your time to the maximum now. A way to understand to spend time to the maximum you possibly can. And like Steve Jobs once said, you know, live your day like a dying man. Live your day like a dying man. So use your time to the maximum, because you will never get it back. Use your time to the absolute maximum, because you'll never get it back. Yeah, put that aside, because I wanted to talk about something else. Something that I feel that is very common. Very common. And it's the idea of bribery. Now, when I mean bribery, I'm not talking about the big briberies of, you know, I'm going to give you millions of dollars if you do something. No, it's how we bribe ourselves as well as other people to do like small things. And I want to show you, it's because we do it to ourselves without really realizing its advantages as well as its disadvantages. Now, how do we bribe ourselves? How do we bribe ourselves? You know, let's take an example that we can all relate to in the monastery. You know, let's take an example that we can all relate to. Let's say I am not going to do this, and as a reward for that, I'm going to do this. Or I'm going to do this, something I don't like, as a reward for that, I'm going to do something else. This idea of giving yourself a reward for something, or for doing something or not doing something. This idea of bribing yourself in the sense that you're saying that, you know, if I do this, I'm going to give myself a treat. You will understand it more if we talked about it in the eyes of another person. Like, for example, like I've seen this, it's very common, I've seen this with lots of children, is that you tell them, you know, Buddha, right, if you go and listen to this sermon, I'll give you 100 rupees. Where you say, you know, or if you go and do this meritorious activity, I'll give you $2. And, you know, you're giving them a task, and you give them a reward for it. For example, you know, in things we do with children is, you know, when they do a chore around the house, you give them pocket money. So if you wash the dishes, right, I'll give you this amount of money. If you, sweep your room, I'll give you this. And these sort of almost bribery, or these sort of treats or rewards that we give ourselves as well as other people. You know, it's always very good, isn't it? it's very good because, for example, if you talked about how, you know, paying a child to do chores, you get chores done. I mean, that's a very good thing, right? The child is finally washing their dish. Why? To get money, regardless, but they're at least washing their dish. Or you can tell them, you know, something that I see very common is that, you know, they'll say, you know, Buddha, you know, go to the monastery, listen to a sermon, and I'll give you this reward. I'll reward you for it. Now, it's good, isn't it? Because that means the person will come to the monastery and, you know, will have to, you know, live in this environment. And they get paid. I mean, it's a win-win situation, isn't it? Isn't it? I mean, even in the time of the Buddha, he did the same thing, right? Anathapindika, you know, bribed his son, if I remember correctly, and said, you know, go and listen to the teaching of the Buddha and come back and tell me, and I'll pay you a lot of money. The son goes to the Buddha. The Buddha makes determination, may you forget everything I tell, may you understand the meaning but forget the words. So this child had to listen to the entire sermon, start to end, and goes to his father and couldn't tell him anything because although he understood everything in the sermon, he couldn't say anything. So even back in the time of the Buddha, he did the same thing. So it must be a good thing, isn't it? See, it has its benefits, but it also has drawbacks. Benefit is, well, you are giving them exposure. You're exposing them to something good. So, for example, a child doing chores, they're doing chores, which is a good thing. They're doing meritorious activities, which is a good thing. But what's the drawback? They're not doing it properly. Properly in the sense that they're not doing it with the right mindset. For a merit to be a merit, what needs to be there is what? The good intention. For something to be good, you always need to have what? Good intention. Do you agree? Anything done with a good intention, is considered good. For example, everything else is neutral. For example, is a knife good or bad? Is a knife good or bad? You know, you're using the knife to cut some carrots. Now it's good and useful. Because why? Your intention is to do what? Cut carrots. Now replace carrots with fingers. Now is it good or bad? What do you call it? Ladies' fingers. What is it? Bandakka. Right? But actual fingers. Now it's what? Now it's bad. But actually, in this world, everything is neutral. According to your intention, does it make it good or bad? For example, is a pen a good or bad thing? Is a pen a good or bad thing? It's neutral according to your intention. So you can write something good with it. You know, you are an amazing person. You know, I aspire to be someone like you. Again, you give that to a person, they're going to be happy. Your intention is good. Or you can sign a document for war. See, it's always to do with intention. According to how pure your intention is the amount of merits that you collect. So if your heart is pure, if you're doing something entirely for the benefit of someone else, you can accumulate, you know, the amount of merits you can accumulate has no bounds. But if your intention has, you know, has a bit you know, you have a pure intention, but also you have a selfish intent. Now the merit you accumulate is what? Hindered. So for example, when a child is washing the dishes for, no, because they're washing dishes for what reason? What reason do they wash dishes? For the money. For the advantage. Therefore, how much merits do you think they accumulate from that? How much merits do you think they accumulate from that? Their entire intention is what? Selfish. Therefore, net gain of merits is zero. Actually, you know, it could be, if it's fueled by greed, if that intention is a greedy intent, they're actually accumulating what? Demerits. They're actually accumulating what? Demerits. Because if your intention is fueled by greed, aversion, delusion, right, the three poisons, right, lobha, dosa, moha, then that mind is not a meritorious one. It's demeritorious. Whereas if it's fueled by generosity, if it's fueled by, you know, compassion, if it's fueled by, you know, alobha, dosa, moha, this is meritorious. So if a child is doing something with the idea of greed, now are they accumulating merits? Are they accumulating merits? No, instead they're actually doing demerits here. Because their intention is greedy. So for example, you know, they're washing this plate knowing that they're going to receive 500 rupees. And with this 500 rupees, they're thinking, you know, I'm going to buy this toy I always wanted to buy. And I'm going to play with this toy and I'm going to enjoy playing this toy. And so now the intention is what? Greedy. Therefore, they're not accumulating merits. Now let's take the story of Anathapindika and his child, his son. He bribes his son saying, you know, go to the Buddha and listen to a sermon. So this son comes and sits down at this sermon for what reason? For the money. So he starts to listen to the sermon with greed. Thanks to the Buddha who made the determination, may he understand but not remember the words. Now he started to understand. As he starts to understand and can't remember the word, think about it. In the first 5 minutes of the sermon, think about how annoyed this son must have been. He's listening to all these this amazing talk, but he can't remember anything. He's listening but can't remember. At the beginning, he was probably really angry, really upset. But luckily, because he was listening to the Dhamma, the more he understood, the more this started to settle. The more he understood, the more this feeling of greed and anger started to settle. Instead, now the appreciation, the compassion towards it, themselves as well as other beings, now this starts to come up. Now he starts to understand the Dhamma. Thanks to who? Thanks to the Buddha's determination. If the Buddha did not make determination, what was the point of Anathapindika listening to the sermon? He would have gone back to his father and regurgitated as much as he possibly can and got the money and used it for something else. So this thing, bribery has its benefits, but it also has drawbacks. Because now you're not doing what you do with good intent. So never bribe yourself. Never bribe another person. Unless there's nothing else you could do. Use bribery as your last resource. If not, you're not giving them the chance to do the maximum they possibly can. Because now they have a different intention. Their intention is no longer to help another person. Now their intention is, how can I get my reward? How can I get my reward? You know, how is by doing this, will I get more reward? By doing that, will I get more reward? When I get my reward, what am I going to use it for? For example, you know, people say, you know, I'm going to go through this diet. And once I go through this diet every week, at the end of the week, after I do this, I will eat this chocolate. You go through a diet and then you break the diet to make yourself feel happy that you went through the diet. Ruining the entire purpose of you going through the diet. That's why use this bribery as your last resort. Don't bribe other people. Don't bribe yourself. You know, if I spend, as children we used to do this, right? You know, your parents would say, you know, Putta, if you study for 1 hour, I'll give you a five, you know. Nowadays, now it's not break. You say, Putta, if you study for 1 hour, I'll give you 5 minutes of screen time. So this child is studying for what? Screen time. So they're doing maths. 2 + 2 = screen time. 4 × 2 = screen time. Now they are learning, but they're not giving it their maximum because they have something else in their mind. They have a different intention. So instead of bribing, the one thing that we can do is promote or make the child or make yourself understand what you are doing, why you are doing it, what is the purpose. Because once you understand its purpose and its importance, because when you understand something's importance, you do it not for anything else but because of its benefits. So for example, let's say, you know, instead of bribing yourself to do something. So, for example, you know, I'm going to go and go to the monastery, but when I come back home, I'm gonna have this chocolate cake I have in the fridge. Let's say. Instead of bribing yourself to go to the monastery instead of taking something like food, instead understand why you go to the monastery. Now you're taking the maximum benefit out of it because you're now understanding why am I doing what I'm doing. See, a child who learns in school is a child who understands the benefit of going to school. When they realize its benefit, now they go to school willingly. Now they wake up in the morning willingly because they understand the purpose of going to school. But if the child goes to school only because, you know, he or she gets to meet their friends and, you know, gets rewarded, now they will wake up for a completely different reason. Now the amount of merits they accumulate is hindered. As well as the amount of merits you accumulate is blocked. Blocked in the sense, you know how sometimes we do merits and we have a hope and a dream for something? You help a person with the intention of them helping you in the future. So, I say, for example, I help person A thinking that when I need help, person A will come and help me. Your intention is what? It's got its good part. But also has a hint of what? Selfishness. Therefore, the amount of merits you accumulate is reduced. The amount of merits you accumulate is what? Reduced. Because why? You have a selfish intent. But if your intention was pure, you know, I'm helping person A because person A needs help. Now the amount of merits you accumulate has no bounds. Cannot be bound by anything. If you don't understand why you're doing what you're doing, then you're not doing it properly. If you don't understand why you are doing what you are doing, you're not doing it properly. You don't have the motivation to do what is right. I mean, that's why, you know, doctors will give you medicine and say, this medicine is for this. And that's why, you know, medicines are named accordingly. This is pain relief medication. This is cough syrup. So you know why you're taking what you're taking. Why do we take a cough syrup? Because you have a headache. Do you take a cough syrup because you have a headache? No, you take a cough syrup because you have a cough. So you know, for as long as I have a cough, I should be taking what? So you know what the purpose is. So the doctor doesn't actually need to tell you, you know, have this cough medicine every time you have a cough, because you know cough syrup are for coughs. Painkillers are for removing pain. So the doctor doesn't need to tell you, you know, take this painkiller to get rid of pain, because you know. So you know whenever you feel pain, you have to take this. For example, you know, nowadays you don't even need to tell a person when they have a headache, they take what? The first thing they think about is what? Cough syrup. When you have a headache, the first thing you think about is a cough syrup. No, you think about, you know, medicine to get rid of it, paracetamol. Because we know its purpose. That's the thing. If you don't know its purpose, if you don't know why you're doing what you're doing, you're not doing it properly. If you don't know what you're doing, if you don't know what you're doing and why you're doing it, you're not doing it properly. So understand. Don't bribe yourself. Understand. Don't bribe other people. Understand. The more you understand, the bigger the merits that you can accumulate. The purer your heart, the more merits you accumulate. That's why, you know, the more you understand the Dhamma, the purer your heart becomes. The more pure your heart becomes, the more merits you accumulate. The more merits you accumulate, the more you're able to understand. It's a positive feedback loop. It's a positive feedback loop. See, to understand the Dhamma, you need merits. Well, that's a bit higher. To understand Dhamma, you need merits. To do merits, you need a pure heart. Pure heart. To have a pure heart, you need to understand. Understand, pure heart, merits. Understand, pure heart, merits. This is not a negative feedback loop. It's a positive feedback loop. That's why the more you understand, the purer your heart becomes, the more merits you accumulate. That's why you'll feel your progress on the path is exponential. Your progress of understanding will be exponential. Because why? The more you understand, the purer your heart is, the more merits. Therefore, you understand more, therefore you have pure hearts, and therefore your if you were to draw a graph of your understanding, a graph of your path, the graph will be what? Exponential. The graph will be what? Exponential. Exponential, and then it will drop. Because at one moment where you have true understanding, you will have a pure heart, but unfortunately cannot do. And that's what we call good activities will be done. But merits will no longer be there. I mean, Nanze will go and help another person, of course. But merits won't be accumulated. Because merits aren't accumulated, doesn't mean the understanding will differ. No, there'll still be understanding. But this loop stops. The loop will stop. So, you know, again, use bribery as a last resort. Don't bribe others. Don't bribe yourself. Don't bribe children. I get to see a lot of children who are bribed. You know, their parents say, you know, come and talk to this Swami Nuanse and I'll give you something. Right? So the child sits down to do what? Sits down for what? I'm getting this toy. So Swami Nuanse sits down and starts talking. The child is nodding, but nothing's going in. Instead, he or she is waiting for what? The Swami Nuanse just to stop talking. Why? So he can go get his reward. See, we're playing with minds here. I think this is what is really dangerous. We're playing with minds. When we talk about people, we're not talking about people. We're talking about minds. We all have a mind. Playing with minds are very dangerous. Very dangerous. Like I said yesterday, I was able to talk with some children from a school. And something that we really talked about and is the dangers of views. Now, a view is something that is given to a mind. How? A view is something that's given to the mind. How is it given to the mind? How can you give a mind a view? How can you give a mind a view? You can't. Minds cannot be given views. Minds take views. Minds cannot be given views. Minds take views. Let me explain. You know, we say that you can give a view by saying, eat chocolate. Right? Chocolate is really nice, really tasty. It's amazing. And we say that I am giving you a view of how good chocolate is. Actually, I can't give you a view. You take the view. You take in this view. How do you take the view? You can only be given views using two senses. Two of your most powerful senses, which are sense of sight and sound. Out of these two senses, which one's the most prominent one when giving views? The most prominent one is actually sound. To be given views, the strongest one is what? That's why we have what? That's why the opposite of worldly views is what? It's the understanding of the world, which is why we have Sotapanna. Because why? The views come through the ears. Sota. That's why to understand, you have to listen. Because your ears, the views you get from your ears are one of the most strongest ones. The views you get from your ears are the strongest ones. So, views cannot be given. You can take in views. For example, if I had said the same thing about chocolate in a completely different language, would you take it? Would you think about chocolate to be good now? Now, for example, let's take a language. Let's say I start speaking in Martian. Huh? No one here can understand Martian, right? I start talking in Martian and I explain how amazing Martian chocolate is. chocolate on Mars, how amazing it tastes. Do you understand that? So do you take them? Do you take? Did I give you a view? No. But if I was talking in a language that you understand, and I say, you know, how, you know, chocolate is one of the best, is the best substance in this world. Now, what I can only give you is what? What can I give you? I can give you sound. I can give you words. What can I give you? I can't give you anything. All I can do is what? All I can do is think. All I can do is talk. Right? I can think, I can talk, I can do, right? All that can happen is what? A mind arose and passed. That mind arose and passed, and that gave the energy to the body to do what? To speak. Technically not to speak, but to give, to vibrate. Vibrate the vocal cords, and we're not going to go through that, but vibrate. And that's the only thing this part can do. The rest of it is yours. The rest of it is yours, meaning if that vibration, vibrating energy, let's take, we're not going to say sound energy because there's no sound there, it's vibrations. When that vibration energy comes and enters your ear, do you hear it? Do you hear it? Do you hear it? When that vibrating energy comes and goes and hits your ear, do you hear it? Not all the time. Not all the time. For example, you know, sometimes there are sounds around you, but because you don't focus on it, you don't actually, I mean, the ear vibrates, but you don't hear it. The best example is the cocktail party effect. When you're at a party with crowded with people and you're talking to a singular person, you can hear what the person is saying. Although there's hundreds of other people also talking, your main focus is on the person in front of you. Therefore, you can hear it. Your ear is vibrating about with all the other vibrations, but because of your focus, you can hear that. So, you know, you're not actually hearing everything your ear vibrates. You can only hear if the conditions of hearing are fulfilled. What are the conditions? Vibration, ear, nerves, brain, as well as vipaka. Now the question arises, doesn't it? Then is views vipaka? Is the views we get a vipaka? Because for us to hear, just having an ear is not enough. Just having the eardrum and stuff like that is not enough. Just having nerves is not enough. Just having, you know, my amazing brain. Brain is not enough. Just having the brain is not enough because why? You need, it needs to come to the mind. And for the mind to arise, it needs this as well as vipaka. Vipaka is this flow of energy, the complete flow of energy. Without all of this, you can't hear. So, hearing chocolate is tasty, is that a vipaka? Hearing chocolate is tasty, is that a vipaka or not? Is that a result of a process or not? It is. However, the view that comes to your mind is not a vipaka. Why not? You can only accept a view. You can only take in a view if you think what? If you have the core view that Nitya, Sukha, Atta. That in this world everything is fixed. Everything is one and unique. And if you take it in an even more basic way, there are some things in this world that can bring me pleasure. If that view is in place, now you can accept it. Now you're able to accept this view. Now you write in your book, according to this person, chocolate gives me what? Oh, it should give me what? Happiness. Now you write in this book of views that this is what should give me happiness. Now the next time you go and you have chocolate, you read this book and you think, oh, it should give me happiness. Is it giving me happiness? Yes, tick it. And now it goes to your memory and now you like chocolate. But that's how views work. No one can actually give you a view. Only you can take it. Now, when I say you can take it, that can give you this false feeling that you can choose whether you take it or not. That's a false feeling because you can't choose. Unfortunately, you can't choose what views you have. Views are something that you can't choose according to the causes. According to the views you already have, do you accept or reject a view? For example, right? If I come and tell you, you know, stealing is, you know, the thrill of stealing. You know, it's always good to steal, you know, come and steal. The process goes on. The mind rises and passes away. And you get this view. Right? View comes in because you have this potential view that there is something in this world that can give me pleasure. And that thing can be stealing. You come to your book and you now want to write down, stealing is, it will make me happy. However, as you are going down to find the space to write, you have this, you already have a view saying what? Stealing is bad. Therefore, you don't write that. You write that at the very, very bottom. That view is also there, but at the very, very bottom of the list. Because there will always be a time where When your mind is feeling so much suffering, so much mental vexation, that it will accept what? Stealing. That's why some people, you know, you can ask a thief, right? Before they started stealing, do you think stealing is a good thing or a bad thing? You know, we grow up knowing that stealing is bad. You know, we are constantly given views that stealing is bad. You know, the five precepts says what? Stealing is bad. But when this internal, this vexation comes beyond that, then we excuse ourselves saying that, you know, stealing is bad. But, you know, the person next to me has a very nice pencil. I want that pencil. Let me take it. So again, views cannot be given to you. Views can be only taken. When I mean taken, I don't mean that you can choose whether you take it or not. You see, for as long as you have this idea that there is something in this world that can give you pleasure. There is something in this world that can give you happiness, that it itself can contribute. Like, there is happiness in that, that if I take it, that happiness I can take as well. If you have that view, now, you know, no matter what view comes into place, it has some sort of place on this book of views that you hold. Now, let me explain that. There is no book in the mind of views. I hope you understand this. But it's a nice way of understanding. Because you have this levels of views. That's why someone who's a sotapanna, above all of their views is written what? The view of anicca, dukkha, anatta. So no matter what view, whatever comes to play, the idea of anicca, dukkha, anatta is always there. That is, world is you know, so anicca, dukkha, anatta is the, you know, the quality of the world. That's always at play. So, you know, no matter what, their vexation doesn't go beyond a certain level. Someone who's an anagami has, you know, beyond everything, the strength, the view of anicca, dukkha, anatta is at a strength that no matter what, you know, they will never, the vexation will never go beyond the point that they will lie, steal, kill, murder. And also get angry. So again, no one can give you views. You can only take it. Now, this is why it's very dangerous. Because no matter what you do or what you say, it can always be a view for someone else. No matter what you do or what you say, with whatever your intention is, it can always be a view for someone else. So something that we were talking when I was talking to these children is that, you know, in our lives, there's always that one or two people. When you meet, they always, you know, there's always that group of aunts, right? Whenever you go meet them, they have something to say. Puta, you know, you've gained weight. You know, son, you've lost weight. You know, daughter, you know, you're becoming darker. You're becoming skinnier. You're becoming, you know, I think you've gone shorter. You've grown taller. You know, always something to comment on. Even if there's nothing to comment on, they'll find something to comment on. Like, you know, something is wrong. You know, there's always that person, right? Now, what they don't know what they are doing is they are contributing to this book of views. Now, no matter how much Amma says, don't listen to the auntie, you know, she just wants to say something, right? No matter what your mother says, that, you know, this aunt is just trying to say something, just trying to, you know, just wants to say something, it just says something. You don't take what she says to your heart. Unfortunately, it's written in this book. Unfortunately, it gets written in this book. Now, I remember me and a group of my friends, we once did something to almost experiment on this. Oh, we had one friend who was very focused on how they looked. And so every day, one of these five people will go up to him and say, I think you've gained a bit of weight. Now, let me tell you this. He had not gained a single kilogram, right? He was as normal as he was. But, you know, one person will go every day and say, you know, I think, you know, if you've gained a bit of weight. It looks like you've gained a bit of weight. By the end of this week, What did this person think?
I think I've gained weight. I think I've actually gained some weight. Huh? No, I have to lose it. I have to lose it somehow.
See, whether you like it or not, these are the views. Views can be taken, can be, and again, not given. They are received. They are received. Your mind receives it. For as long as you have that view, your mind receives. For as long as you have ignorance, your mind takes them in. You can't control it.
So as we were talking to this group of children, they're a group of A-level children. So it's a very good topic that we talked about. And something that we came to talk about is also that, you know, because of these views, because you can't control it, these views start to strengthen. The more you see it, the more you hear it, the more stronger it becomes. So for example, that's why, you know, this is why things like social media, you know, these are almost a fountain of views. The more you see something, the more the view is indoctrinated in your head and the more stronger it becomes. The more you see, the more the view comes, the more stronger it comes, the more higher it goes. On this book, this rule book of views. And this is why, you know, in this current day and age, you know, we're seeing more and more people who are currently going through major eating disorders. If I remember correctly, statistically, I think after COVID, we are seeing more and more people with eating disorders, such as anorexia nervosa and bulimia nervosa. So anorexia nervosa, if I was to explain it very briefly, in a very brief way, it is the idea that no matter how skinny they are, every time they look in the mirror, they think what? I'm fat. And so what they do is they stop eating or they reduce the amount they eat substantially. And they're skinny as a stick. I remember, you know, once I got to talk to one of, as I was talking to one of my sisters, she was telling me about one of her friends who was obsessed with what do you call them? Pop idols. Right? And there was a specific idol who was really beautiful, and this friend of my sister was aspired to be like them. And one attribute that they have is they're very skinny. I mean, they spend a lot of time focusing on them and on their body image. So, you know, there they go to gym and whatnot. But this young child, I think she was 14, 15 at that age, just completely stops eating. You know, whenever her mother tries to give her food, she'll be like, I'm not hungry. Probably eats an apple and that's it. Why? To lose it. To lose all of her so-called fat. Although she was extremely skinny, no matter what, she thought she was fat. Because the view that, you know, I'm still fat is there. That's anorexia. Now, bulimia is similar. However, the mind still has the idea that food is good. Food is something that gives pleasure. So it comes to a point where, you know, the vexation they feel goes beyond their control, and therefore they start eating. Or after they eat, they feel really guilty, and so they take it, they vomit it all out. Again, because they have a view, what? I am fat. Here's the thing, when we talk about views is something that we can't control. And you don't give views. Views are taken. That's why it's very dangerous, because what you say and do can entirely affect a person. That's why we have to be very careful in what we say. That's why we have to be very careful in what we do. Because we have no idea how it affects another person. Because
in reality, what does it mean to be fat? In reality, if we talk about the reality of it, what does it mean to be fat? Can you be fat? In reality? No, the body has extra, the body has gained extra weight. Extra weight meaning it's comparatively, isn't it? Comparatively is extra. Because we define this to be normal, right? If this is normal, this is overweight, this is underweight. Now, when we talk about being fat, healthy, not healthy, there are health benefits, but the idea, I'm not talking about whether, being fat is good or being skinny is good, or I'm not talking about the health aspect of this. I'm talking about the mental feeling that we have of it. Now, luckily, doctors have described or has put a line to say what is normal. So we know what our body should be like. So that's why, if you think that, according to this line, I'm overweight, then you try your very best to come to this line. If you think you're underweight, you try your very best to come to this line. So that is health in the aspect of health. But in the aspect of the mind, because you are not your body. You are what? You are a feeling of the mind. Is your mind fat? Is your mind skinny? How skinny is your mind? The mind is like this, ne? Take a caliper and we'll find out how skinny the mind is. But some people, they have, thicker lines. Therefore, they are fatter than the others because that's their mind. No, a mind doesn't have a size. The mind is just a process, the process of perceive. The mind is just a process to perceive whether it's fat, whether it's skinny. No, you perceive yourself to be fat and skinny. So this is the thing. What does it mean to be fat? What does it mean to be skinny? No, it's a feeling that you have. Again, I want to reemphasize, it's not going beyond healthcare, saying that, I'm not saying that being fat is okay or being skinny is okay or, being normal is okay. No, I'm talking about the feeling, the perception that you have. So if doctors say that you are overweight, please try going back to normal. If, her Guru Hamda talks about this a lot, right? I don't want to go through this as well. But, if you're underweight, to gain weight, I'm not trying to go beyond healthcare here. Instead, I'm trying to talk about the perception that you have. The perception of you, I am overweight, I am underweight, I am normal. No, this is just a perception the mind feels. The mind feels this. But in reality, the mind is just a process. The mind is a process of Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vinyana. It's just a process. It arises, passes away, perceives, that's it. Arrives, perceives, passes away, and that's it. So is the mind overweight? Is the mind underweight? Is the mind normal? The mind is a mind. That's a mind. The mind is a mind is a mind. Whose mind is better? Whose mind is worse? Whose mind is better? Whose mind is worse? No, a mind is a mind. Is a mind. So when that auntie comes and says, Puta, you've gained weight, you've lost weight, all you have to do is understand what? It's a mind. Because, you know, in both ways, these are just views. These are just views. These are just views that the mind holds. These are just views that the mind holds. I mean, you know, let's say, you know, the person also comes and says, you know, putta or dua, you know, you've become lighter, you've become darker, you know, it looks like you've tanned. Again, what are all these? These are just views. The mind is a mind. I mean, for you to be, you know, you have to understand that this is just the mind at play here. That you are just a perception of the mind. Your body isn't you. Sorry. The body isn't you. The body is something that the mind uses to interact with the external world, to perceive the external world. But your body isn't you. Sorry, the body isn't you. Not your body. The body isn't you. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't care about it. You should care about it. Because why? It's needed. You know, if the body isn't working, the mind cannot arise in that. And we call that death. If the body isn't working properly, the mind can no longer arise in the body. We call that death. But if the body is working, now let's say the body is working, but let's say it's in pain. Now the mind arises with what? Pain. So, you know, don't do anything that will give you pain. But the body is just an instrument, just a tool that the mind uses to interact with the outside world. The body isn't you. See, but no matter how much I tell you this, the moment you stand in front of the mirror, who do you see? Who do you see? No matter how much we talk about this, right? How the body is just a perception, just a tool that the mind uses. Right now you think, oh, yes, it's a tool. Then you stand in front of the mirror, what's the first thing you see? You stand in front of the mirror, what's the first thing you see? The body? No, you see me. This is me. You know, the aunt was right. I have, you know, I've become darker. You know how sometimes children, they don't have a, what do you call them? Like a filter. You know, children don't have filters. So if they say, you know, you've grown old, it means what? You've grown old. If a child comes and tells you, you've become fat, it means what? Because they don't have a filter. You know, that filter grows with time. As you mature, you understand that people don't want to hear your opinions, and therefore their filter starts to get blocked. But until then, they don't have a filter. So something that a lot of people don't like is when a child comes and tells them that, you know, you've got a gray hair. Your hair's gray. Because why? That makes us feel what? It makes us feel really old. I don't want to be old. Because I am what? I am young. I'll be young forever. I'll be young forever. And ever and ever and ever. I don't want to be old. So when a child comes and points and says, you know, you have a gray hair, people do become very stressed. People do become very stressed, very, very agitated. Because why? I am growing old. Can you grow old? Can you grow old? The body? Well, yes. If you define old correctly, yes, you can grow old. If you think about it truly, no, the body can't grow old. The body just works as it is. It's just as time goes on, it doesn't work the way it does, or it changes its appearance or whatnot. And so we call that growing old. But what about the mind? Can the mind grow old? Can the mind grow old? No, the mind arises, the mind passes. I mean, you know, do elderly minds look like this? And, you know, young minds, you know, look like this. No, mind is a mind. So, this is the thing. The difference between your mind and the mind of a newborn baby is what? Exactly the same. The only actual difference is that you have more that you remember. You have more that you remember. That gives you, that's what we call maturity. Maturity is the experiences that you have. That's what makes you mature. You know, all the hardship you had to endure, you know, going through school, all the knowledge that you've accumulated. That's what gives you maturity. But the mind of you and a newborn child is exactly the same. It's a mind. But no matter how much I tell you how, you know, you are not your body, every morning when you stand in front of the mirror, who do you see? Me. This is why. This is a continuous fight. A fight against what? A fight against knowledge and feeling. Because all this is knowledge. What do you have to do? Fight against your feeling. Feeling of, this is, you know, I am overweight, I am underweight, this is who I, this, the body is me. It's a constant fight. This is why, you know, there should be not a single time where you have nothing to do. Because there's always something to do, because every time you feel what? At least until you get rid of the view, you still feel what? That the body is me. You have lots of things to fight with. You have to constantly fight against. Because your feeling is feeling what you've felt your entire life. But with the knowledge of the Dhamma, you're able to get rid of that feeling. You're able to get rid of the feeling. But it can only be done with the knowledge of the Dhamma. You have to put it into practice. You know, put it into practice. The more you practice, the more the knowledge turns into, or the more the feeling reduces and turns into the reality. Because we live in this falsehood, we live in this you know, imaginary world where I am my body, I am, you know, living amongst this, and that's why you know if people, you know, people can hurt you. People can hurt you. If someone knows something that you like, can't they hurt you? Can't they control you? If someone knows something that you like, can't they control you? You know, how do we control a child? You say what? If you don't do this, I will take away this. So, for example, if you have an attachment towards something, you can be controlled. So, for example, let's say you have an attachment towards, say, very simply, a cup of tea. Mm. Say you have an attachment to a cup of tea. Right, or a cup of coffee. All someone has to do is say, if you don't do this, we're not going to give you this. So, for example, if a child likes tea, right? So, what do you do to get them to do something that they have to do? He says, what? If you don't behave properly, you will not have tea. And so the child will behave. But let's say this child becomes an Arhat, and say, if you don't do this, we won't give you tea. What would that mind say? Okay. Who said I wanted tea? If you don't clean your bed, yeah, we're not gonna give you chocolate. Okay. I don't want chocolate. It's a good thing they're not Ajnanas, isn't it? How else are we gonna control them? The other thing, like, if there's something that you have an attachment towards, you can be controlled. You can be controlled. This is something, it's a fault that we all have. If there is something, a feeling that you like, you can be controlled. At the very least, if you like feeling, you know, this feeling of I, me, you know, I am important, you can be what? Controlled. That's why someone can come up to you and say, you're such an amazing person, you know, you've done this, you've done that, you've done this, can you do this for me? Because you like this feeling of being important and being very caring and very, I mean, that's how you can get someone to do something. You say, you're such a generous person, you know, you're such a helpful person, you know, but you know, at home I have, you know, my fridge is broken, can you help fix it? And what do they do? Oh, I'm a helpful person. I'm such a good person. So what am I going to do? I'm controlled. I follow and say, okay, I'm going to... Because I like feeling what? I like feeling how... I like the feeling of my ego being stroked. So I do. This is the thing, you know. If there is something that your mind likes, if there is something... Your mind will do anything to get that. Let's say the mind is void of anything, void of everything. It doesn't mind anything, but it likes the color, likes the color blue. Right? Now, for the mind to see blue, if I say, "Okay, I will show you blue if you do this," can't I control you? I can control. This is the thing, you know. Now, what we have to see, this is the thing, you know. The mind is so vulnerable. The mind is so fickle. For as long as it has the view of ignorance, the mind is vulnerable. The mind will change like this. This is why, you know, we have to strengthen our mind. We have an untamed mind. We have to strengthen it. Tame it. And the only way you can strengthen and tame this mind is by understanding the Dhamma. Understanding the reality of the world. By understanding the reality, you're able to tame this untamed mind. You're able to change this fickle mind into a strong mind that's able to do something. I mean, very simply, ask, you know, think about this. Can you stay in one place for 5 minutes? You know, it's very difficult because we have what? We've got 10 fingers and we've got clothes. Why? In 5 minutes, what do you see yourself doing? Something. Because we can't stay still. Because why? The mind wants to feel what? Wants to feel pleasure some sort of way. That's how fickle the mind is. You know, and then it starts playing with your clothes. You're like, oh, at the very least. You do something. Because the mind wants to feel pleasure some sort of way. It's an untamed mind. Technically, for every single thing that you have a strong bond or... When I say strong, every single thing that you have a bond towards, you are shackled to them. You are trapped. You can't go beyond their limits. If you like the color blue, you have to stay within the sight of the color blue. You can't go out this room because why? You need to see the color blue. you're trapped. You're trapped. You know, you have to find a way to get yourself, to untrap yourself, to escape. Escape from the bonds that keep you bound, that can control you. You know, I'm not going to lie to you and say it's easy. It is easy. But it's not as easy as you think. Because you're going against what? What you feel. You're trying to understand something that you don't feel. Because whenever you go in front of that mirror, you always see what? You. And you're trying to understand that this is not me. It's not I. But the body. It's not I, but the body. See, once you're able to understand that, you're able to take a step back. Take a step back and you're able to, you know, see the body for what it truly is. The body is an absolute marvel. The body is an absolute marvel. Think about it. Tell me a machine that works as beautifully as the body. Tell me a machine that works as beautifully as the body. You mean, think about this. Your body is constantly working. All by itself. You know, the lungs are breathing. The lungs are exchanging, you know, oxygen, carbon dioxide. Your heart is pumping. You know, currently every breath you take, you know, hundreds of bacteria and viruses are coming inside and your body is fighting constantly with them. And how much of that do you control? You know, if you had breakfast, your body is now digesting all that, you know, sending it to the liver to be filtered, then to the kidneys and, you know, all the way through the body. And everything works so perfectly in sync. Until it doesn't. But it works in sync. Tell me a machine that works as perfectly as the body. So many minute, minuscule things are done with no one to control. That's the beauty of the body. But you don't see it until you take a step back and realize it's a body. A body of causes. A body of cells, tissues, organs, organ systems, of you know, elements coming together to work in harmony. And then instead of looking in the mirror and saying, oh my God, I've gained weight, you think, this is a miracle. For the body to work, it's a miracle. Now you're appreciating everything you see. Now you're able to appreciate everything that you see. So I think, you know, that's what we have to do. All we have to do is practice. Put what we understand into our lives. That's all we have to do. Take knowledge and put it into feeling. And that's the practice. Just understand. So I think we have Poya coming up on Monday, if I'm correct. And on Poya, we have a Dakineyo program, which everyone is, again, invited. Some of you have a choice, some of you don't have a choice. Those of you who have a choice, please do come. Those of you who don't have a choice, well, you have no choice. You have to come. But also, you know, don't take it for granted. I think something that happens, and it's something that normally happens, is that once you have something and you always have something, it loses its value. Although Dakineyo, we have Dakineyo every 2 weeks, basically. It's an absolute rare occasion. Even though it happens every 2 weeks, it's what? Rare. According to what? According to your timeline in samsara, this is one of the most rare. I mean, think of how lucky you are. I was thinking about this and I was talking with some of my monks about this. You know, in our pasts, how often do we get a chance to do merits? Although in this life, you know, doing good becomes like, you know, it's almost second nature to us. In the past, was it the same? Like right now, if someone needed help, you would help them. But in the past, was it exactly the same? No, you would have, you know, you may not have helped someone in the past. You know, to be able to listen and hear the Dhamma is one of the most rarest things on earth. You know, the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, these are the triple gems. Gems because they're rare. So to be able to give an offering to the triple gem, that's unheard of. And yet, you know, some of us, every single day, two times, three times a day. So for example, some of our noble heartians, they do Buddha Puja three times a day. How lucky they are. You know, sometimes, you know, we look at our 18 minuses, 18 minus the Anagarikas and our noble hearts. Sometimes you see how lucky they are. Because if you think about this, right? In your lives, how often do you get to, you know, wash the robes of a Mahasangha? Of the Mahasangha? How many times? I'll tell you this, as a lay person, I have literally never, I don't think I've ever touched a robe until I became a monk. Some of these children, I was talking to a child the other day. Every single day, he'll find some robe to wash and give back. Every single day. In this samsaric journey, how often do you think that happens? That's incredible, isn't it? Every day? They're incredibly meritorious. But then also, you know, with great power also comes great responsibilities. But also they're also surrounded by these people, their association, which also costs what? Merit as well. You know, they are able to gain lots of merits as well as every single moment they're using their merits as well. That's why we have to understand this. So, you know, as a seated Shravika, Shravika, as Anagarika, we have to understand that, you know, we get to do, you know, you sweep a place here, you get tons of merits. But every moment you spend, you're also what? Using up merits. It's a dangerous game that we play. So it's like you have, it's like almost having a medicine that when you drink it, it can cure anything, cure every sickness. But the more you keep it, say it gives off a pungent smell that slowly kills you as well. So do what you have to do in this asana to the maximum you possibly can. The only reason we have this asana is for what? The only reason for this asana is what? Is to understand the Dhamma and to attain Nibbana, nothing else. This is why it's a dangerous game that we play. I every time I meet with these 18 wise Anagarikas, that's the one thing that I tell them. You're playing a dangerous game.
use your life for what you have come for. Nibbana. So play the game, but be careful. I gave you the same warning. Yeah. The Dhamma is the most, the Buddha Dhamma is the Noble Triple Gem, are the rarest things. For you to have met them, and for you to be in constant association, requires lots of merits. So you're playing a dangerous game. Acquiring and spending. Okay. Do we have any other messages? No? So Dakini is coming up. A chance to do lots of merits. As well as we have another ordination ceremony coming up. You probably saw was that English word for Pandu? Dai Pandu Palas. Dai clothed men. Pandu Palas. Pandu. The Pandu team. Right? It's not yeah, Pandu is a dai, but yeah. It doesn't give the same feeling as Pandu. Like Pandu gives like a complete different feeling. When you say dai, it's like a dai, clothed dai. So we have another Pandu team, which, you know, in 2-3 months will also be part of the Mahasangha. I mean, again, in the monastery, we have so many meritorious activities. And, you know, these people, you know, some of these Anagarikas, you know, we're among all of you. Like, I remember my mother telling me last time, like, before she came, she said, you know, she told one of these Anagarikas that the next time I see you, you won't be like this anymore. You'll be wearing a robe, and I'll be able to worship you properly as part of the Mahasangha. And, we have lots of opportunities to do so many merits. And I think, you know, they're very lucky as well, the Pandu team. Because they have lived amongst all of you. And then they get to train to live amongst us. And then they spend the rest of their lives playing a dangerous game. among the amazing association of the Mahasangha. So yes, in a couple, I don't know the exact date of the ordination ceremony. But as I get informed, I'll tell you all as well. For you to all join in and see and witness this amazing ceremony, ordination ceremony. Okay, let's take a few moments to transfer merits and conclude today's session. Okay, let's take a few moments to transfer all the merits we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues and Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listening Dharma, and engaging various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of Lord Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the message to the Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to the generation of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend the Dhamma. Let's all take a moment to transfer merits to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all chief leaders of chapters, who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and committed themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget among them will be the monks and nuns residing in local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to Gusarananse, as well as other monks resident in the monastery, as well as Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Take a moment, transfer merits, and express our gratitude to those who made great efforts to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be that by translating some, sharing them out with others, inviting others to join them. May the power of the merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plain. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. There's also a moment chance of merits required to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha shelter, arms, with medicines, as well as those who pass in their no-hacks and their well wishes. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer our merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, friends and acquaintances, employees, employees, and to all those who helped us, supported us, assisted us in any shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed in physical and mental ailments. May they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress. May they abstain from meritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer merits to the devas, brahmins, spirits, demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as numerous gods and deities, who are committed to protecting and fulfilling the Sambuddha Sasana. Let's not forget, among them will be our garden deities, who keep watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May the power of the merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all those who have been friends of family to us in this even long journey in samsara. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all the members of the armed forces, as well as the police force, who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those lost lives in the war with the friend of foe rejoice in the merits acquired today. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all those who lost their lives in natural calamities, such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslide pandemics, reminding ourselves among them will be those been friends of family to us in the long journey samsara. May the power of the merits, if any of them have been born in the world of planes, may they redeem themselves and be born in the bliss of planes. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss and nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let's all resolve, may the power and blessing of all the merits be acquired throughout the day. We've been witness the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arathinvasis, Arathmehinvasis in this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits acquired throughout the day, you and I and everyone who made this program success become an Arathinvasi or Arathmehinvasi in this very life in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Chan be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnin mitetva Dvesha ginnin mitetva Moha ginnin mitetva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravitva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravitva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravitva Mamada siyalu loka Siyalu satvayo Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravitva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravitva Raga gini niveva Dvesha gini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivansapa labeva Nivansapa labeva Nivansapa labeva Tunwange Susyananda Mahakuni Velin Seal Lok Seal Satyam Nibbana Pramisukhin Sukhita Vitta Sadhu Sadhu.